And alternatively,
the truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
Has to be said, Cameron, I'm just a teeny yeah. bit concerned about your choice today, okay. purely and simply because of the grammar. And when we actually have Professor Jason Whittaker, an English specialist and indeed editor of many a fine computer magazine in times past, as well as being the head of the School of English and Journalism, I'm not sure whether "ain't it good" is necessarily the best sort of title to actually work our way through that, or indeed "cowboys don't." You know, it's the apostrophe, it's the "ain't" and the "isn't," etc. However, Cameron, I know we can rely on you to select something completely different from that particular perspective for your choice this week.
Yeah, we just kind of came across this guy on one of the music servers that we get for the show National Access. And we thought, well, let's give him a spin. And he's really got that throwback kind of mid-90s Alan Jackson kind of feel to him. And the more artists that I interview, the younger crowd coming up in country music, the more they're throwing it back to 90s solid country music that came from George Strait and Alan Jackson and Mark Chestnut and guys like those. And this guy is just a prime example. Young. He's from West Virginia, and man, I think he's going to do really well. His name is Sam Austin, and here's his brand new song, and you're going to listen to it on Siren FM.
It's nice to be frugal, because it depends on what's actually being saved up for Saturday night. And we could ask for answers on an email, but we won't. If you'd like to call your local station and request it, you can do so if you go to the Sam Austin page. But of course, if you're listening to Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station, we've already played it, and we'll probably play it again.
There you go.
But there is one little proviso for that, Cameron. It needs to go to the Midweek Drive team to actually pass the sort of final vote on this. So, Jason, thoughts on
definitely.
Saving it up for Saturday night?
We don't need to save it up for Saturday night. We can play it on a Wednesday
again
and again.
Nice. Yes. You know, I can almost hear Cameron writing that one down.
Yes.
Saying, I'm going to use that in the publicity. Yes, exactly. So thumbs up. Very traditional country sound,
yeah,
I thought.
Yes,
I'm sure
it was.
Tessa Snart will love it when we play it for her tomorrow morning. And Catherine?
I liked it. It's a dance like you never danced before, and it reminds me of me and my friends on a Saturday night, which is a bit of an atrocious sight when we dance. So I quite like the lyrics to that one.
Dance like you never danced before. It's phenomenal stuff. How is life going with Nashville, Cameron, and life and all sorts of things? The reason I actually ask, I was singing your praises to the head of tourism at Dallas recently. We had Mark Thompson. Oh, I used to think he was in charge of the BBC. No, he's actually looking after tourism for Dallas and Fort Worth. It's fantastic stuff. But they were claiming that actually Dallas, Texas is the place to go if you want to have the authentic American experience. As you might imagine, they would be. I thought you might say that, Cameron. That's why I thought I'd thrust it out for you itself.
No, it's not. I'm not going to argue with them, but there is a long-standing thing going on between Texas and Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Texas says that you wouldn't, Tennessee says Texas wouldn't exist if Tennessee didn't exist, and it goes back and forth. And as far as real, authentic American experiences, man, you get them in both places. I mean, I'm married to a Texan, and when you go to Texas, it truly is something completely special. And Dallas, Fort Worth, I think if I had to choose, I'd take Fort Worth out over Dallas, but they all are part of the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. So, I'm not going to argue with them. I think this is one of those cases where we're both right.
spoken as a true former Canadian, now fully nationalised, indeed naturalised, let's be honest, American. Ever headed off to Dallas, Jason?
I've never been to Dallas. Been West Coast America and East Coast. But
that was my point, you see. Yeah. Most people do either
exactly,
or.
But
they don't get that authentic experience. You know, remember the Alamo. You know, all of those wonderful sort of phrases. The wonderful book
Alamo
repository.
The Alamo is in San Antonio.
Just checking.
And the San Antonio is a real Texan experience because you get a lot of the Mexican influences. So you're right close to the border. And it's just a beautiful city. The river walk and everything there is great. And my wife is from about 60 miles east of San Antonio. So I love Texas. It's just such a great state.
And not to be confused, of course, with the TV television series that reemerged, of course, as a remake of the 1980s and continuance. And yourself, Catherine, I know you're keen to go travelling in a few months' time.
I've never been to America, but I'd really love to go. But I've got my heart set on New York City.
Heart set
a bit
on
different,
New York City.
But I definitely would like to explore.
Well, there you have it. And anything else you'd like to promote for Nashville Access, of course, the weekly roundup of news from Nashville, which, of course, you co-host, Cameron.
Yeah, we're on over 50 radio stations in 14 countries, and later today I'll actually be doing a phone call with our affiliate station in Tamworth, Australia. I do a weekly thing. It's actually their morning show when I'm talking to them. And we'll be talking about this week's show and just kind of all the stuff that Dallas and I get distracted by. And this week, it's really cool. We actually featured the single here on the show last week or the week before, Mark Chestnut. So we've got a full-blown interview with him that we're doing on the show. So it's just going to be another great show this week. We always have our top three songs in the world. We have some national news, our National Access Super Pick, which we play every week here, and, you know, just Dallas and I being a couple of idiots.
It's just a wondrous time, Cameron. Just a wondrous time.
It is,
but before
yeah.
we go into those last two questions, which Catherine will ask you in a few seconds, we've got a little challenge. It's not really a challenge. It's an award, Jason. I'm awarding you the official status of this, which you might sort of think, when you became head of the School of English and Journalism,
what possibly could be left in store for me?
There's a stage for that. I'm going to award you the role of celebrity producer for the programme this evening. I'm going to give you two items, one of which we'll play, the other one we won't. Okay, they're pre-recorded. And the topics are basically how kindness can be contagious. That's topic one with psychologist Lucy Beresford. Or alternatively, the cost of paying for a child. How much do children actually cost these days, both male and female? We have Jasmine Bertels, a personal finance expert, and Simon Ransom from Sainsbury's Bank. So which angle? I mean, you might like to take advice from Cameron. Would he go for the cost of bringing up a child? or the contagious nature of kindness?
Actually, I will ask Cameron in a moment, although my preference is for kindness as a contagion. But Cameron, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it would be the kindest thing because, I mean, I know nothing about kids. Never handed them, never had them, never wanted them. You know, they're just little petri dishes, really.
I suppose the alternative, you could at least validate your decision by finding out how damn expensive they are. So.
That's right.
Even though the strap line for this one was, steep child of mine. Like we said, public relations folk can't turn a good pun. That's the important
thing. I'm just slowly sliding under the table here.
Catherine, any thoughts on that? Would you go for the cost of a child or kindness?
Kindness.
Yeah, I think that's
unanimous.
Kindness will be coming up after Aha and after Catherine. You put those last two questions to Cameron. Go, girl.
Cameron, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I will, because today was more reasonably better than the rest of the ones.
And that's what we like, baby steps, you know, incremental. That's the important thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Paying It Forward, a wonderful movie from a wee while ago, all about the importance of kindness and the importance of ensuring that you benefit and ensuring that there is more kindness in the world. Try a little kindness was the old song. Now, to address this and begin to analyse some of the research that was developed by DoubleTree by Hilton in highlighting the nation's desire to pay kindness forward, we're delighted to be able to welcome that ace psychologist extraordinaire and general all-round wonderful faculty member of the School of Life, Lucy Beresford. How are you, Lucy?
Oh, Alex, you're so kind. Thank you.
It's been far too long since you were back with us on the Madrid Drive Morning Edition, so welcome back. In terms of this particular survey, though, I mean, certainly those people who are following the news recently, and obviously most of us do in some way, shape or form, we need a bit more kindness, don't we?
We do indeed, and that's what's been so amazing about this fascinating research that I've been doing with DoubleTree by Hilton, because 88% of Brits actually claim to perform one act of kindness a week, which is fantastic. There is, nevertheless, still scope for a little bit more. 80% of Brits said that actually they could see more kindness in the world. So yes, now would be the perfect opportunity for us all to do that.
It's very much an important aspect of shifting the mindset and shifting the paradigm to work through that, because as we've often noticed, if you behave like Eeyore and complain about all sorts of things, you get more things to complain about. If you actually be a bit more positive, you'd be amazed at the results.
That's right. Not only is there this wonderful ripple effect, as evidenced by the research, which suggested that, you know, if somebody does something to you, psychologically you just feel so inspired to go out and do that extra thing for somebody else. But also the wonderful thing is that kindness can be taught. So we've been doing this work with DoubleTree by Hilton at the School of Life, and we've created, both of us have set up these Mastering the Art of Kindness classes. We're running them in London, we're running them next month in Liverpool, and in September in Manchester, so that people can actually start a conversation about kindness and actually identify the things that really go to make up kindness, like empathy, being open-minded, not being judgmental. So when you know that these things can be taught, actually there's no excuse.
We should certainly be looking at some of our politicians, I think, globally signing up for this particular aspect. No names, but there are a number out there who possibly using the politics of fear that don't actually help the human condition.
Well, that's the interesting thing. In essence, we are very empathic creatures, human beings. And so our default position is to be very helpful. That's how communities survive. And anthropologically, we can see that, you know, people, let's say people who might have otherwise been redundant within the community, their role within the community is to talk about kindness or to do kind things for other people. And through that, we as a species, if you like, have become much more alert to being kind to other people, putting yourself in someone's shoes. And this amazing research has really shown that effect, that paying it forward effect, can be so beneficial.
Does it build on the basis of altruism, i.e. that self-sacrifice being something which, if you were a cynic, you'd say, well, of course we're altruistic, we're self-sacrificing to pass our genes forward? Or is it something that actually, in terms of the comeback that we actually get, simply actually has that feel-good factor? It helps our endorphins flow.
It is that feel-good factor. Yes, it is a little bit selfish to be after that feel-good dimension, but sometimes being selfless gives you that reward. It makes you feel good about yourself in that moment. But the positive effects on the person that you've done the kind thing to can be very long-lasting. And what happened, it really all came about because DoubleTree by Hilton gives a warm chocolate chip cookie to all its guests when they check in. And that very small, very gracious gesture has the potential to really last the whole day for the person who's just arrived at the check-in desk, feeling quite frazzled, possibly in a very new environment, new city, new country. And they suddenly are on the receiving end of this very kind, very welcoming gesture. It makes them feel good through the rest of the day. And that's the effect that kindness can have, which is why if we can all try and be a bit kinder to each other, I think the world would be a better place.
The metaphor of infusing kindness into everyday life is a wonderful one. It's like a tea bag, a wonderful golden tea bag, just effectively sort of letting its joyousness into the flow of life.
Oh, you're so poetic, but it is. It is this incredible, powerful effect that if you do something nice, it could be, you know, it could be smiling at a stranger, chatting to someone you don't know on the bus next to you, or actually maybe not doing a nasty thing, not honking your horn at that car that's going very slowly in front front of you. Something that simple can really make a big difference. And yeah, the ripple effect, the infusion of it, can actually last within you and within the other person for a very long time.
And certainly that notion almost of self-control at times, where you might feel as though you would rise to the bait about maybe being cut up by a cyclist or a driver, etc. If you can hold back, it does pay dividends.
It does, because in effect, you're not sending out those negative energy messages. You're actually sending out a positive message by simply not doing something. The universe will pick that up anyway, and the karmic quality of that is beautiful.
Mastering the Art of Kindness classes, of course, as you mentioned, across the UK, but Lucy, people are listening to this at the present time and thinking, we need to know, where do we go to find out further information? What's the best online site to check out?
Well, if you want to find out about DoubleTree, their website is doubletree.com. And if you want to find out about the classes, Mastering the Art of Kindness, maybe book tickets. All the money for the tickets goes to charity. Or if you want to read the report, that's schooloflife.com.
See, that, Lucy, is one of the reasons why I'm sure in a few months' time, or possibly years at worst, it will be Dame Lucy Beresford. It will, you know, the honours will become flooding in. It's just wonderful stuff. Lucy, it's been fabulous touching base with you, as ever, today.
Thank
you. You had a reasonably interesting and pleasant telephonic link with us on the programme today.
It's been beautiful, and you're very kind to have me on the show.
Well, Lucy, would you be kind enough to return in the not-too-distant future?
Yes, please.
We do like to be kind as far as Siren FM is concerned, don't we, Jason?
We do indeed.
And the University of Lincoln as well, really. We're
of
kind
course,
at open days
course.
And all manner of things. Indeed, little plug, there is a couple of open days coming up. There are a couple of open days coming up in a week and a bit's time. There we are, much corporate section done. all welcome on Friday the 15th of July and Saturday the 16th. There we are, marvellous. Of course, when it comes to kindness, clearly Romulans could be considered as, well, so kind. The Minbari, perhaps. Eldar and the Dark Eldar, the Asari, the Castithians. Of course, Ed Fortune, we're referring to your recent article in the latest edition of the world's longest-running magazine of cult entertainment, Starburst, in which you have rightly coalition with the recent political scene decided to look at some of those aliens who might be trying to take residency in the United Kingdom before too long.
I think that's basically two pages of me trying not to use the word elf,
yes,
to be quite honest. I think I use it once when we're talking about the Eldar, because they are space elves and they originally were marketed as such, along with the space orcs. I also get to be really mean about the Vuzangyong, which were rubbish. And that's one of those things where I think it's very hard for someone to argue me away from the Star Wars monsters from being good, because they wear pants.
Well, I don't know, somebody's mother must have liked the Yuuzhan Vong. Very important. But the Minbari, very sort of... Catherine, do you think we've actually just lost our sort of way now? People listening in at 25 past 5 o'clock thinking, what are they talking about? Yuuzhan Vong, the Minbari, the Castithians. What's going on here?
Maybe a little bit, because you lost me a little bit too, so...
never mind. Jason, thankfully, is on the case, as indeed he was when I raised the issue, Ed, with Professor Jason Whittaker, William Blake specialist, amongst other key
indeed,
things that he's
indeed
put together, including many computer magazines. Would you share some of the computer magazines that you've worked
well, on? Well, so I worked mainly for PC Advisor, Macworld, Digits, the 90s and early 2000s.
The year of the floppy disk.
Floppy disks were already on the way, I'd say.
Shakespeare versus Cthulhu, an aspect that you've drawn our attention to, Ed, in the coming soon noteworthy new titles. And just quote from your oratory, if you allow me, 2016 has seen a nationwide celebration of all things Shakespeare, and it's inevitable that some of the homages would head into wilder, crazier territory. What if William Shakespeare, England's greatest playwright, had discovered the truth about the great old ones and Cthulhu, rather than H.P. Lovecraft? Something which I think our college in English should actually consider, Jason.
I absolutely love the works of Lovecraft. So Shakespeare and Lovecraft, although of course it would be Dr. D would be the real person to find those secrets.
Well, of course, in the Call of Cthulhu game, they deal with the works of Dee and an entire wonderful subplot with Edward Kelly running around with a copy of the Necronomicon underneath his arm, trying to get involved in that whole Boyle conspiracy.
Yes, and writing in the Enochian keys and all those secret languages.
So this particular text, Ed, which is released on August the 2nd, is it riffing on the whole notion of Pride and Prejudice and zombies? Is it that kind of mashup that we're talking about here? Abraham Lincoln, vampire slayer and the like?
What Jonathan Green's done, and Jonathan Green's better known for Nightmare and Alice and a whole lot of fake fantasy stuff, but what Jonathan Green's done is he's brought together a whole bunch of different genre writers and asked them to take their own different riff on it. So I think comparing it to Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, no, they've not taken the actual text of Shakespeare and then modified it. What they've done is they've used each one of Shakespeare's works as inspiration for something else.
Oh, interesting stuff. Lots of other great things from Brave New Worlds. As you know, Ed, and I'll say this, when we feature the editor, Jordan Rice, next week, we always turn to your articles first in Starburst. It's just the way it is. But we did say that we were going to also discuss one of the events that's taking place in Manchester between August the 26th and the 28th of August 2016. It is indeed the official Starburst International Film Festival that's... It's just a buzz thing which seems quite phenomenal. I mean, looking at the website alone excites me, with the Christopher Lee red-eyed demon looking there rather like a former MEP, literally sort of just looking out there for the Starburst International Film Festival. Would you like to share with us what excitements people can actually expect should they choose to go West Coast or Manchester over the August bank holiday?
Well, it's going to be an absolutely packed event. So, I mean, just running across the highlights, we've got Peter Beale, Star Wars The Force is going to be the end. We're going to have three events that are talking about the real story behind the making of Star Wars. There's going to be a masterclass in Hollywood filmmaking for that as well. Obviously, it's a film festival, so there's going to be an absolute pile of original films there. We're going to deal with the British Film Institute, so we can show an absolute load of movies. One of the things that we have planned as well in the evening is we're going to have a kind of, if you're familiar with Mystery Science Theatre 3000, we're going to have some professional comedian types and some generally very funny people talking over one or two of the more exciting, schlocky movies as part of an entertainment. But that's part of the sideshow. I mean, we're going to have stuff like Aliens, presented by Peter Lamont, because why wouldn't you? We've got Steve Pemberton and Shea Smith over with their movie Inside Number 9. We've got an absolute pile of stuff going on, all movie related. Obviously we have Virginia Hay for Mad Max screen, Mad Max 2. We've been very lucky to get Bob Baker to come along as well, and he will be talking about A Matter of Loaf and Death, the Wallace and Gromit feature. We've had Bob in Manchester recently, actually. And you quite rightly refer to one of our highlights, which is a horror double bill, including Psychomania and Dracula in 1972, of all things.
It's just wonder after wonder. You haven't even mentioned the new episodes of Thunderbirds, the guaranteed Thunderbirds 1965, three brand new episodes with the original cast voicing the original puppets, remade, repackaged, thanks, of course, to the wonderful Jamie Anderson, three brand sparking new episodes. I mean, if that doesn't make 2016 the complete year, what does? It's quite a phenomenal. Interesting enough, Ed, take a little moment here to actually pass on the news that Emma Tinson, who, if you recall, she was the student that we put in contact with your good self. She interviewed you for her dissertation. Do you know what she actually got?
Oh, please do tell me.
She got a first-class honours.
Excellent.
There we are. So it's an office. Great stuff. Just celebrating the work of Wendy from that point of view. Moving on, Jason, any thoughts about the Starburst Film Festival, which looks as though it's going to be...
It looks great, actually. I did want to make a comment going back to your recital of this list of aliens, and you missed a trick. One of my favourite aliens ever was from, I think, the first E.E. Doc Smith Lensman book, in which the villain was Roger the Alien. A name that has caused hilarity for my wife ever since.
It's not advice, it's a name, okay? It's quite clear. You know, it's nomenclature rather than anything else that might cross your mind. But
the Starbuck Festival looks absolutely fantastic.
It's a name, not an instruction, yeah. I keep meaning to swing back to Lensman at some point.
Don't. I did. It really... They're much better in your childhood and memories than they are. They're appalling books.
Well, I'm waiting for them to do a Green Lantern movie, a decent Green Lantern movie, yes. And then I'll do a feature on Lensman. But until they do that, I think I'm safe for a while. Yes. Until they do that,
they really don't repay the revisit. This was the man who got his doctorate for his recipe for donuts, if I remember correctly. So yes,
it's critical stuff. Absolutely. Clearly, when we do reintroduce the Midweek Drive Bake Off, you'll be well in there.
Yes,
you know?
With Roger the Alien, and this time it will be an instruction.
So what other delights from the current magazine of Starburst, which of course incorporates the... Well, it's an interesting one. Ghostbusters, the movie, has certainly polarised so many folk, particularly this reimagining, reboot, and going by the trailer alone, it looks as though the initial advance scuttlebutt is not great for this one.
Well, I'm going to wait and see, because I've not seen the movie yet, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's very hard to kind of separate the signal from the noise with this one. Because there's a lot of people who want it to fail for reasons that have got nothing to do with the movie, and you've got to ignore those voices. So I'm just going to go and see if it's any fun, to be honest.
I was pleasantly surprised by Independence Day, which I saw recently. I thought, actually, it's not quite as traumatic as I thought it was going to be. Brent Spiner does a cracking turn. Jeff Goldblum still actually has the acting chops to work through the process. And there's even the opening for a sequel in which, obviously, keeping the Republican theme of American politics to the fore, they go and prepare to kick some alien butt.
I mean, as a comic book nerd, I do recommend digging out the IDW Ghostbusters series. IDW's run on almost all of the 80s franchise stuff, which is pretty much what they're doing a lot of at the moment, has been superb yet again, because what they do is they mine the previous material for all the juicy bits and then get a decent artist and a decent writer and kind of turn it into one solid mythos. Mythos would be the word you'd want to use to describe Ghostbusters, after all.
Absolutely. In fact, I would say mythos just captures the moment, as well as avoiding crossing over those beams, which can end in tears. And it probably does. Jason, you've had a chance to have a look through a couple of recent editions of Starburst magazine.
Any
thoughts or questions you'd like to
have? Actually, one of the ones that caught my attention was the War of the Worlds, which is still, after many, many years, one of my favourite books. And... So not so much question, but just an observation. It was a flashback to Jeff Wayne's musical version, of course. So at any point that you can get a musical rendition on the show, Alex, that would be absolutely fantastic. Well, the dulcet tones of Richard Burton telling us how no one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century.
More Richard Burton as opposed to Liam Neeson, of course.
It has to be Richard Burton. It has to be.
Well, we have featured Jeff Wayne, of course. He also has a Midweek Drive.
Fantastic.
We have connected on that sort of basis. And I can even sort of send you a link to the podcast of my lecture to the Level 1 English students, all about H.G. Wells and War of the Worlds. So, the complete approach for that.
Now there's somebody who I do return to regularly who always repays rereading, which is Wells. Fantastic writer.
I ran a few years ago now, but I ran a War of the Worlds inspired event, an interactive theatre event, and it was well worth getting the Martian cylinder built. It was actually a big bin that we'd sprayed and put explosives in it. But the way the people responded to it, because they didn't know exactly what it was, and it was lots of smoke machines and lots of very small explosions and eerie lighting. And I suspect had it not been dark, it wouldn't have been impressive. But it's that. I think these days it immediately strikes a nerve and people know instantly what it is.
Yes.
Catherine, War of the Worlds. Has it crossed your consciousness in any way, shape or form as a case of, no, it's got nothing to do with fashion at all?
Well, I'm not all about fashion, Alex, but no.
Fair point.
It hasn't crossed my mind. I'm more interested in the BFG that's coming out. I've seen it on the front of the magazine there. And because I'm a bit sceptical about all the remakes, and I wanted to know what's your opinion on...
The Big Friendly Giant.
Yeah, it's coming out. I can't imagine...
Directed by Steven Spielberg.
I can't imagine David Jason not being the voice of the BFG. So...
Even Ed Fortune has gone silent.
Yeah.
I would never consider it a remake. I mean, there's the Cosgrove Hall cartoon, and there's the marvellous Jack and Ori recital of it as well, but for me, it's always down to Rodal. I think it's essentially genre in many ways. I think it's one of those ways that genre catches you and you don't realise. You know, if you love the BFG, you're a genre fan. If you love Rodal, you're a genre fan. He writes books about giants, psychics, other worlds, science fiction, and, you know, occasionally James Bond. But, you know, he's, you know, it's quintessential fantasy. Very British fantasy as well. Also very funny.
See, you only live twice with the big friendly giant is the mashup that has yet to be made. You know, I feel this sort of incarnation of Mr. Osako believes in a healthy chest, combined with the big friendly giant, could be, you know, the winner for the early years of the 21st century. Just a
Attack on Titan meets Casino Royale.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, it would definitely work. A reminder that the starburstfilmfest.co.uk is the go-to website for the Starburst International Film Festival. We'll be talking more about that with editor Jordan Royce next week as far as the programme develops. And, of course, Starburst magazine available now in all good bookstores. You can, of course, subscribe for a manner of all manner of delights as well. And, of course, listen to the Starburst podcast on Fab Cafe. Does that tick all the boxes of corporate aspects, Ed, that ensures that your salary is maintained if not raised?
I will also plug my own show, which is Brave New Words, every Sunday on Fab Radio International, 12 till 1, and you can also catch that on the website as well.
Brave but New Words, that has such people in it. Paraphrasing
Shakespeare and the Cthulhu back in.
Exactly.
In Relay, yeah, that's Cthulhu lies sleeping.
It's come full circle. All we need is Katie Dorr to actually be our Ariel, and all will be revealed in the whole thing.
No, because then I'll be the Caliban. That just doesn't work.
we'll work on that.
Surely you'd be Robin the robot rather than Caliban.
I would hope so.
In fact, in so many ways, it has been said that maybe the robots will replace academics in years to come, but not yet. We're still working on that premise. That's the important thing. Catherine, go for it. Last two questions, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Of course I have.
And will you be joining us anytime soon?
Absolutely, if you'll have me.
Always assuming.
No one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century that human affairs were being watched from the timeless worlds of space. No one could have dreamed we were being scrutinized as someone with a microscope studies creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Few men even consider the possibility of life on other planets. And yet, across the gulf of space, minds immeasurably superior to ours regarded this Earth with envious eyes. And slowly and surely, they drew their plans against us.
From Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Kind of updated remix version of The Eve of the War there, in many ways. Of course, with the caveat that actually she's not live from Gibraltar now, because Gabriella, you're in Barcelona, are you not?
Yes, I am. Change of the norm and without my faithful friend Frodo.
The world is still turning, Gabriella. Worry not. Things will still breathe and we will still continue to put one foot in front of the other. But how does it feel being part of Gibraltar, overwhelmingly voting in favour of Remain, and then you think, what's happened?
I think it's a lot of disappointment. Definitely a lot of disappointment in the streets. If almost 96% of us voted Remain. We didn't expect it. It was a shock to the system, I think, to everyone locally did not expect it, and I think even the government themselves didn't expect it. So when it came out, big shock to us, but we're going to have to see what the UK does and follow suit and see if there's any way that we can remain part of any trade agreements and It's a strange time right now.
And presumably the fact that you've hied off to Barcelona, nothing connected with that at all. You're not trying to build any relations with the Basque separatists, are you?
No, that was actually purely coincidental.
It's okay, because let's face it, you are one of the best reporters at the Gibraltar Chronicle, after being a former reporter at the GBC, the Gibraltarian Broadcast Company, and indeed, of course, being a top midweek drivette when you were actually at the University of Lincoln. So there we are. In fact, it was actually BJW before Jason Whittaker. it's amazing. Jason's in the studio at present. Any thoughts that you'd like to share with Gabriella Peralta, our girl in Gibraltar?
I mean, it was astonishing to see the result that came in from Gibraltar.
I can only imagine.
I can only imagine what it's like the next morning, or even that night.
Gibraltar remained. Sunderland, well, they're just going the different way entirely.
Sunderland ruined it for us. We were the first one to announce our count, and I was at the count. And we were rushing to be first. Because I think there's another small town in the UK that could beat us to the crown of being the first one to announce our vote. And I thought about 3 a.m., I thought, oh, God, this is not going the way. We've been down for, I think we're out for about an hour by 3 a.m., and I thought it's not going to change.
Yes.
Many of us went to bed seeing the count not in our favour and still thinking somehow London would change it and maybe Scotland and all the rest, and that would go enough in the it would be a Remain vote, really. But it was a strange morning. It was a quiet morning in Gibraltar, and as my friend heard from a TV presenter who was in town at the moment doing a piece of camera, who announced a sad day for Gibraltar, and I feel that it was a strange day. Everyone kind of was a bit quiet.
Of course, Article 50 hasn't been pressed as yet, so at least there's 2 years plus a couple of days. So I know I'm trying to put a positive spin on the whole system, but
I'm still wondering if Article 50 is going to be invoked before 2047 or no need to rush.
No, exactly.
As another person resigns from their post,
very British. Yeah. I'm actually, Gabrielle, what's the view that's coming across as we're seeing literally political leaders falling like dominoes across the entire British political landscape?
What the local view from Gibraltar on it? God, we just think it's ridiculous. we watching it from home, I think it's just unbelievable. You can't lobby for something and you can't support something for so many years, like Nigel Farage did and Boris Johnson, and then just drop as soon as it actually happens and goes your way. It just shows that they never really wanted it to happen and they were just using it to push themselves politically. But, yeah, we can't believe it. We're kind of sat at home thinking, are you kidding me? Everyone's now dropping out. But what can we do? We're a small nation. All we can do is cross our fingers and see what the UK do. I know that our chief minister was having talks with the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, and he went over to Scotland, I think, to have chats with her and see what we can do about it. Because I understand Scotland's such a big, it's a much bigger country than Gibraltar, and if they voted Remain, it's just really to see what, if Scotland can do anything that can, Gibraltar can follow suit and perhaps do like a Greenland and Iceland where one stayed and the other one didn't and work it out. But I think what we've decided is see how the UK do it and follow suit, and if it's a leave for the UK, it's going to have to be a leave for us.
Yes, I can't quite see Scotland and Gibraltar kind of necessarily being the most comfortable of bedfellows, but you never know. It's been the rise of nationalism and all sorts of other areas.
Well, actually, now we're really big friends. This has happened for the past 2 weeks. Now we've got the Chief Minister flying over to Scotland to have talks with the Scottish First Minister. Yeah. First ever, I think, it's happened. So,
Catherine,
now we're chumps.
Given that London might declare independence any second now, only kidding, London, any thoughts on this from your own perspective?
Well, I've actually turned off all my notifications for the news lately. I feel like one thing after the other, every about 10 minutes I'll get a little update and I'm like, oh, all right then. Like, I feel like I'm reading the news like it's normal now, the thing people are going, this is happening, I'm like, oh, okay. and then I'll go put on a movie and ignore the world for a bit.
And maybe that's the thought, Jason. Maybe we should just put on a movie.
Yeah.
Actually, the news the past week, I was distraught the day after, but the news the past week has turned into, I've never read so much news, mm-hmm. because it has literally been, what the hell, and that's my polite version, what the hell is happening now? Yes.
Well, as we can see, back in the day, there's Gabriella actually in the science studio doing her magical thing with, of course, Rachel, who is an English graduate from a few years ago as well, and, of course, celebrating all sorts of areas from that perspective. So, Gabriella, as you know, you're always a key part of the good ship Midweek Drive on Lincoln's first community radio station, Siren FM. So, yeah, it feels that we're not going to declare independence, unless, on the other hand... No, we're not going to declare independence. We'll continue in our own way.
Well, Lincoln voted out, didn't he?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Don't get me started.
I felt betrayed by my university city.
Yeah.
I checked the first thing in the morning, Sky News, and saw which cities had voted out, and I thought, oh, Lincoln.
The problem was across wasn't England.
Surprised. I wasn't surprised. I was not surprised, but... it is, you know, yeah. It is what it is. But I think with the UK, you know, you're an island. You've got the trade agreements and all the rest, but Gibraltar has a border with Spain. It's been threatened to close down.
Yes.
If we left the EU. So I think that's really what the morning was when we woke up the next morning and everyone was really upset because a lot of people thought, you know, are they going to close the border on us like they did? God, how long ago was it?
Gabriella, I marked your dissertation. We shared that pain as tutor through the whole thing back in the day.
Yes, when it was about the border.
Exactly. And if they'd only read your dissertation more widely, they would never have actually voted for it.
Well, actually, and nobody discussed the border between Northern Ireland and Eire, of course. You know, a 300-mile border, which, what the hell happens with that? And so
I've
much
I've
got
of, an Irish colleague, yeah, and she's... freaking out about it because
so much of the peace of the past, you know, decade and a half has depended on that open border with Southern Ireland.
Yeah.
We must breathe, that's the important thing, and share that little kindness that we said earlier. Jason, anything else you want to put to Gabrielle about life, the universe? Barbary apes, of course, very good.
The Barbary apes,
Gibraltarian apes.
Yes.
She's an expert on the whole.
How are you? Yeah. Are you really an expert on Barbary apes?
No, but I've lived in Gibraltar for so long. Well, I've been there all my life, really. So you pick up facts as you go along.
So what's the best fact you know about the Barbary apes?
That they're not actually apes.
That's my best fact.
Yes. Yeah, that's my best one. Yes. I found that out only about this was like 3 years ago. But actually, they're tailless monkeys because they're Barbary. I call them apes about 20 years of my life. They are tailless monkeys because they're actually Barbary macaques, and macaques is a type of monkey. What happened was, due to evolution, because they were brought over to Gibraltar, although it's a warm climate, is not tropical as such. We do have cold winters. So, well, cold, I mean 10 degrees
in winter.
Chilly. So enough for, through evolution, the monkeys lost their tails, because they were losing a lot of heat through their extremities, obviously, through their tail. So they just lost the tail.
Chop it off. That's the little thing. Just lose it. You don't want to lose all that heat there. Oh. You know, let's be ecologically sound here. And as we said, you know, what a wonderful way to actually preface the revisit to the Los Angeles City Zoo than actually noting the fact that the Barbary apes aren't apes at all.
And actually, there's a few of them in Scotland.
You see?
As you forge your links together.
We
sent them to the Scottish Zoo about a couple of years ago.
And that, Jason, is what you call ticking the evolution of politics box.
Absolutely.
In every sense.
We can move on to the next.
Exactly.
Actually, the joke was, like, we'll move over just like the monkeys did a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That Gibraltar will move over to Scotland just like the monkeys did.
It's just absolutely wonderful. In fact, so wonderful, I'm going to ask Jason to put those last two questions to you. Gabriella.
Damn you, curse you. I meant to have something that strings together the words telephonic pleasurable experience. We'll go with that for the moment, if you don't mind.
Good for me. Good for me.
I could never remember it either. Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome, and I hope that you join us again soon. And a great fact about the Barbary apes.
Exactly.
I will definitely.
Gabriella Peralta will return. Yay! And here are the monkeys.